it just blows my mind that people just don't set goals in life, don't set goals at work. And like, how are you supposed to achieve anything? And like, you're just going to go through this career and just be miserable and collect the paycheck? Like, no, man, like, enjoy it while you're here.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training, and we have Brian Konopka in today. If you know who Brian is, he's one of our instructors. Probably the best looking instructor we have. But Brian's a fucking savage on the highways. People don't know that. Let me go back. Brian's a savage on the highway. You don't know that. It's probably about 15 minutes into his class and you're like, God damn, this guy's good. So appreciate you being here. He drove in today. Brian's got like 16 kids. How many kids you got now?
I got four.
Four
girls.
Four girls.
So it's like 16 kids.
Oof. Bro, like, what's crazy for you is you're going from Pampers and just save your money because it's going to go right to Tampax.
We're good. Dude, I don't want to think about that right now.
You're going to be spending a lot of money on that shit.
Just a few bucks, yeah.
Listen, just keep getting promoted, dude. That's it. Take those new positions.
Yeah, right.
Brian, tell us about your career and where you grew up, how you ended up where you're at. Your boy, Vicara, talked about the agency, so I don't know if you're cool with that, if you want to avoid it.
No, I got you.
Okay, it's up to you.
So I grew up in North Jersey, the real North Jersey, part that not many people know about. There's a country up there.
What place is that?
Sussex County, all the way up north. It's not like Bergen County.
No.
It's the real North Jersey, in my opinion.
Okay.
Taylor Ham, you know, New York Giants, Yankees.
Well, hold on a second. Also, like, hunting everything. There's a lot of jokes around Sussex County.
There's a few.
Yeah.
There's a few.
It's one of those places in Jersey where it's like, that's kind of like our Appalachia.
Yeah, but it was a good place to grow up.
So
I can't complain. But, I can't tell you that, like, I always wanted to be a cop. That was not my story whatsoever. Honestly, you know, I'm 5'10", 150 pounds, but I wanted to play football my entire life. So
how'd that work out for you, 5'10", 150 pounds?
I played a year, Division III. And after that, I was like, nah, I'm good. I want to go in the Marine Corps. It's kind of something that's been in the back of my mind. I'd finished college. At the time, I thought I needed college for something in my life, but I really don't think that's the case. But anyway.
Like most people.
I did 4 years. I deployed to Iraq, and I came back from Iraq kind of like bitter and pissed off at the world, to be honest with you. Not much decision-making going on as to what I really wanted to do. So I was like, yeah, whatever. I got my master's. I have the GI Bill, so why not, you know? Meanwhile, a bunch of guys were all applying to be cops. And, you know, the reality is somebody's like, yeah, man, you should put in for this agency. And, you know, I was like, sure, why not? You know, that's honestly how I became a police officer. I figured, well, you know, being a police officer has got to be somewhat similar to being in the military, structured, discipline, stuff like that. So that's kind of how I decided to become a police officer. And, you know, before I landed out in Pennsylvania, being from New Jersey, I was kind of like, Pennsylvania, like, no, like, place sucks. But
people don't realize when you're from Jersey, like, everything sucks about Jersey.
It does. It's certainly.
It's kind of true, too.
It is. When you grow up in Jersey and you're exposed to the people in Jersey, it's just, like, the food's the best. People are, if you're not from Jersey, you don't understand the people. But when you are from Jersey, you just get it. You know what I mean?
You can't replace that either, bro, anywhere. I was just at a class, even in Pennsylvania, dude. Yeah. This past week, I taught on Monday out near Lancaster. And I was like, you guys have zero fucking personality. The whole fucking group of you have nope. And they were like, they're similar to the guys in Indiana, right? So the first time I teach in Indiana, you ever taught in Indiana yet?
Not in Indiana.
Wait, dude. So I go teach in Indiana. And I'm like talking to a crowd where I'm like, am I bombing? Because I'm hitting like a fucking champ, right? And my performance on Monday in Pennsylvania was a 9-6. I was on it. And I was coming out of a stomach bug. I was fucking flawless, dude. So when I'm in Indiana for the first time, come the first break, Kenny was hosting. It's the first time I met him.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, how's things going, dude? Like, what's with these guys? He's like, they love it. I'm like, what? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, they think you're hysterical. I'm like, they haven't left once.
Yeah.
like, what do you mean? So wait, like a year later, Rizzo goes there when he comes on a company and he calls me. He's like, bro, I'm in Indiana and like, they're not like laughing or anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, ask Kenny what they think.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, they love it. He's like, dude, they're fucking weird. I'm like, I know, dude. They're weird. But even when Kenny comes out, like, I love that motherfucker. But sometimes his wife and him are just like staring at me. And I'm like, guys, you could laugh. Yeah. Like, this is Jersey. Yeah. We're just out of our fucking minds here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I get on. I got hired by a local city department in Pennsylvania.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was hired by Bethlehem City Police Department.
No shit.
I went through the entire academy. I was a class lieutenant and whatever. I had expectations for me from that department. First day on the job, I quit. Right after I graduated the academy, they paid for the entire thing. They were pretty pissed off. Yeah, they weren't too happy about that. But looking back, hands down, best career choice I could have made for myself at the time.
Yeah.
Especially knowing where I am now, landing in the interdiction field. Like, that just would have not been an opportunity at that department.
Right.
And again, I didn't know I wanted to do interdiction. It was kind of like, you know, and we can go into the story of how that came about.
Yeah, but I do want to go to that story.
I mean, I got to my station where I was at. I'm off a major interstate. It's a huge artery that runs straight into New York City, Interstate 78. And the reality was I get there and I start seeing all these guys seizing cigarettes. And this is truly how I became an interdiction. I'm like, well, you know, who cares? What the people posting pictures, they got cigarettes on the wall. Like, what cigarettes? You know what I mean? And they're like, no, like, yeah, like this stuff funds terrorism. I'm like, what are you talking about? It funds terrorism. Like, seriously, what are you talking about? And, it wasn't long after that I started watching guys on a terrorist watch list getting picked off. You're like, maybe there's something to this now. And when you really look deeper into it, I mean, I talk a little bit about this in my class. Like, 1993 World Trade Center bombing was funded by cigarette smuggling. And when you go back to 9/11 and you really look at 9/11, you know, we didn't really know much about how they funded. If you actually read the 9/11 Commission report, there's a very small section on what we actually knew about how these guys funded their operation. And the reality is, after we invade Iraq, we go into Afghanistan, we have this huge foothold in the Middle East. Now we get a better understanding of what that actually is and what that means. And, you know, now Congress in 2009 was like, Hezbollah, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, they use cigarette smuggling as a major avenue for funding for their organization. So that's honestly how I got intrigued into it, because I had this background in the military. I'd been in Iraq, and I kind of just had this interest in this terrorism field. And that's honestly what got me hooked in the interdiction. Once you started doing that and you started being able to, you know, read behavior and take as much training as I possibly could, that's when it really started to branch out into something bigger, getting into the drug game and other things.
How long were you on the job until, because we all do the same thing, right? We go out, so writing tickets, running random plates, the stupid shit, right? Run rear antenna radar.
Yeah.
We think we're making all the difference in the world. You're tripping once in a blue moon, you step in some shit, right? You get a guy with a warrant. He's got something in his pockets. You got your drug arrest, incident to arrest, you know? So, you know, how long were you doing that before your eyes were open to there was more to this job?
So honestly, I could say I was pretty fortunate with my command staff. Like, loved proactive guys getting after it. For as long as I was in patrol, I had phenomenal command staff that just wanted to see guys getting after it and making proactive arrests. So, you know, you go to a lot of places where that's not a thing. I had it, and I was very fortunate. So they sent me as much training as they possibly could. I'd say about 10 months on, you know, we did what we call a whisper stop, when, you know, you're It's not a cold stop. An agency is asking you to make a traffic stop. I think it was like 34 pounds of marijuana or something like that, which at the time I'm like, you know, I'm 10 months on the job. I'm like, holy crap, 34 pounds of marijuana. And I kind of got hooked even further into it where I was like, now I know that I knew then about 10 months on the job that interdiction is what I wanted to do. And it really just snowballed from there. I mean, again, not only were they super supportive of me being proactive, but I got to go to as much training as I wanted to. I don't know if I've ever been denied a training request. And which was even better because I know a lot of these guys pay out of their own pocket to go to class. I didn't really have to do that. You can't put a price on that for being able to go to that much training. And I continue to go to training, right? Like, I mean, no one's perfect. You can only get better at what you do. And it's something I still try to do. But that I'd say 10 months in was really when I got hooked in interdiction.
When we say the word interdiction, let's talk about what that word means. And I'm going to be very surface level and not dive deep into it. Essentially, almost every cop is an interdiction officer in some sense. Even if you write tickets, you're interdicting speeders. If we understand the definition of what that means. Just because you don't have a highway doesn't mean you can't go out and be proactive. I think overall, there's a distinction between being proactive and being non-proactive. Interdiction is an interesting word. At its core definition, really means proactive, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it. Now, why I say that is, even going out and working with what you've got, right? If you got one gas station in town that's off the highway, and you guys are a one-horse podunk town, but that's where you want to hit and work, and you spend your energy and effort there, like, that all counts towards the same thing.
Absolutely.
You're a cop like Brian Konopka, like everybody else in this organization, and like the thousands upon thousands of men and women in this country who go out every single day and try to impact crime. You're sitting here listening to him talk about 34 pounds of weed, and you're like, oh, I could never possibly get that. That's not true.
It's not.
Right? And by the way, don't snicker when you hit a pound of weed, because that's exciting to find a pound for the first time.
I mean, honestly, hitting those smaller loads and just stopping cars and getting into vehicles and getting the smaller stuff, I would say that's honestly how, if you're not comfortable talking with people, you got to make those stops. You got to talk to people. You got to get comfortable in understanding what you can do, how you can do it, and just being able to read people, right? Because interdiction is behavior analysis. If you can't understand the behavior of the people you're stopping, if you can't create a baseline for how somebody's acting on the side of the road, you're never going to be able to successfully do this job. But to think, I mean, yeah, I will say at times in my career, especially early on, I was like, man, those guys are crazy. I'm never going to hit a trap. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's crazy. You know, I went to TJ's class. I took Brad's class. And it's just like, it opens your eyes, you know, training just opens your eyes to a whole new level. And even after you leave training, because I know there's guys that leave training, like, man, that guy's on a next level. I'm never going to be able to do that. I promise you, the second you find a trap, it's just going to snowball from there. You're going to hit one, then you hit two, then you hit five, then you hit 10, and it's just going to go. And it's the same thing with not necessarily just traps, but finding your first kilo. Finding a kilo, you're like, man, I'm never going to find a kilo. You hit that first kilo, which I think anybody who's hit a kilo pretty much remembers their first kilo. It just snowballs from there. Next thing you know, you're hitting 4, 5, 10, 20, 50. Like, it happens. It's there, and it's going through your town. And if it's not on a major interstate, I can't tell you how many times I've done consent searches at gas stations for people who are trying to, you know, dump off the roadway, hitting backcountry roads. Because, we covered six different townships stemming from the highway to outside of a, you know, on the outskirts of a city to, like, more suburban areas. But it can be done. It can be done anywhere. It may not be the high volume that you're going to see on a major interstate, but it's out there and it's definitely feasible for, you know, these younger cops who are trying to get into it and trying to understand, what do I have to do to be successful in interdiction?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. And don't forget that the stuff comes off the highway. It doesn't stay on the highway all fucking day. So where's it going in your mind? It's not going to the Port of Elizabeth.
No.
Right? It's not going to just Miami.
Nope. I can't tell you how many jobs I've done. Especially, you know, helping Vaquero out and other agencies. I mean, this stuff happens in broad daylight. It's happening in malls. It's happening in parking lots. It's happening, like, right out in the middle of the public, right at the Lowe's, the Home Depot's, like, all these drug transactions. Like, they're getting off the interstate. They got to go here. You know, it just, You have to understand what do you have in your area and your jurisdiction and make the best of it and work it. Sit down and watch a Home Depot parking lot for a night shift when you got nothing else to do rather than sitting on a station and screwing off or sleeping. You know what I mean? Like, go out there and watch. Whether you're watching traffic or you're watching people, that's how you're going to be able to gauge what's normal, what's not normal, and this looks out of place, and you can go from there.
How important would you really, I know you've spoken about this already, but how important would you attenuate the training you've been to the success that you've had?
Oh, hands down. Now, I'll say this. If, you know, we talk about like the gift of gab and people who obviously you're one of them, you can talk, you can communicate with people. Like, you know, I think you can become a little bit better at how you communicate with people. I think today I could become better at how I communicate in front of an audience, how I communicate one-on-one. So I think you have to kind of separate that from training, because I don't think that's necessarily something that you could pick up at training. I mean, I think you can learn things from people on how to communicate better. So I think when you take communication and actual training, I mean, the training that I took to understand motor vehicles, to understand behavior, to learn, again, what's normal and what's not normal, and to be able to utilize that, I mean, hands down makes my career. It makes my career. And I still go to training. If I have an opportunity to sit in with even anybody from this company, I'm going to sit in on it, you know, because things change, people change, and you know, what we're looking at in the drug world is going to change because they're constantly changing to us. They're going to get our reports, right? These cartel attorneys are going to get police reports. They're going to realize what we're looking for, and they're going to start, adapting to that and putting new things out there. So you have to continually train, because what that does for your career is, I can't put into words how much it helps your career.
I'm glad that we have a company that offers so many different kinds of training, because as you're talking, I'm imagining the new guy or girls listening to this saying, yeah, I want to go. And this is great. You can take these training courses, and I think you should, of course. Obviously, I run the company. But don't ignore the importance of the legal know-how as well. That's not me saying, hey, come to my class and learn about case law. But that's me saying, if you'd like to go out and do this stuff, I would highly suggest that you actually understand how the law works as well. So when you go out and you make these moves, not find yourself in an impasse of what am I supposed to do? You can confidently make decisions in the field and know that when you're done and you've found the things you were looking for and you've brought people to justice, you're comfortable knowing that when it hits that attorney's desk, the prosecutor's desk, they're going to look at it and say, here is somebody who performed this flawlessly. When I was out there getting it when I was newer, I had no idea what the law said. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what voluntary legitimate consent was. I had no idea why things were the way they were, how to make everything flow together. Even why, I remember like being in pre-academy training or post-academy training with our captain, and he was like, yeah, if somebody refuses to get out of a car, you can just make them get out.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that, I'm like, oh, that was a great explanation. Now as an adult, yeah, now yeah, 41 yeah. as a police
yeah, sure.
Like, what a great explanation. Yeah. If somebody doesn't want to get out of the car, you can make them get out. Yeah. And if they don't want to get out, you can lock them up. Yeah. Like, that is the most vague explanation.
Yep.
And I got to be honest with you, I don't even know if he knew why.
Yeah.
Because don't forget, in New Jersey, to get promoted, you have to know case law. But you don't have to know in-depth case law. So my point is, a lot of these promotional companies, they're very surface-level case law. They actually have a hard time understanding the much deeper reasonings behind case law. Because essentially, like, our tests look like this. And I imagine most promotional tests are. Three guys run into an apartment building. Perp one runs in and yells back through the door, the threshold of the door, and he says to da-da-da, yells an exclamatory response. Police officers run through the door, and they find themselves at a hallway. In the hallway, there are four doors to choose from. They hear noise in door three. They make entry to door three. They go in. They find 100 pounds of marijuana. But it's the wrong door. Was this a good entry? That's the whole game of getting promotional prep, is to know the answer to that, because it's based on an event that occurred. For example, I'm just making something up.
Yeah.
So the answer is typically something like, A, this was not a good entry, as the Fourth Amendment draws a clear line at the entrance to the apartment building they ran into. B, this wasn't a good entry because noise alone doesn't allow you to go into a house. C, this was a good entry because the common area of a hallway is open to the public and the door was left wide open. D, this was a good entry because the noise triggered the exigency circumstances of a hot pursuit and gave police probable cause to enter into a home. And you got to answer one of those questions. What these companies fail to do is go into the deep, deep thoughts. So like when I go over Pennsylvania versus Mims in class, I explain why it was granted.
Yep.
It's not, hey, if this person does this, what can you do? It's here's why you can do it. And here's the most important thing. I literally read a 12-line paragraph, and it talks about it was a safety concern. Why were people at the Supreme Court now told when a police officer stops you, you have to get out of the car upon the request of a police officer? It's not a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And they talk about why it wasn't in this one little block of paragraph. But the most important thing to think about or to remember when we're talking about Pennsylvania versus Mims and then carried on through Maryland versus Wilson was the bottom line factor of why this is permitted is because the Supreme Court of the United States in 1977 recognized that it was inherently more dangerous to leave people in cars unattended during a lawful custodial interrogation, a custodial investigative detention where police could not see people's hands or their actions or what they were doing. It would be far more advantageous to law enforcement in a safety procedure to have them step out of the car, even on the side of the highway, while they filled their uniform traffic ticket out. So they felt the inconvenience of the driver of a stopped car who committed something as simple as a motor vehicle infraction could not outweigh the safety factors that police officers face on today's highways in America. When's the last time somebody told you that, right? You know what I mean? Like, let's go into why.
Yeah.
So when you say in court, you know, when you have a defense attorney saying, why did you have my client step out of the car?
Yeah.
Is it some kind of game you play? No, sir. We have people step out of cars all the time because it's a safety issue. Sure. If you actually read Pennsylvania versus Mims, I can cite a few things in it, but overall, the theme of that piece of case law was a safety issue.
Yep.
So not only is it important for us as people who are, you know, out here trying to interdict and stop crime in the highways, which you obviously know my track record, but at a very minimum, you've got to understand that this is dangerous, and that's what the courts allowed us to do, and that's why we did it. Imagine not knowing that, and like, hey, why did you have this guy, my client, step out of the car in this traffic stop? Well, I don't know. Like my captain said in post academy that like we could, and if they didn't want to, like I would lock him up. Like, what would you do? I would lock him up. Well, what? Why?
Yeah.
Because like my captain said so. Did you ever like understand that at all? No.
Yeah.
So that's the importance of when you go out and you're going to take this stuff that's unorthodox, quote unquote, types of police work or styles of police work. It's important to know that the actions you're taking are valid and backed by significant or solid precedent that has been established by this by the courts in
Absolutely.
Your state or at the U.S. Supreme Court level.
It's funny you say that because, you know, I was in federal court not too long ago, and they had no idea about it. That case, it was never even heard of to them, you know, and they had a bad decision for another officer that I said, well, did you ever bring up something as simple as, you know, Pennsylvania versus Mims? Well, what's that?
Wild.
Okay, well, you have a federal judge who has a problem with an officer getting somebody out of the car and therefore suppresses a case, and you don't even quote that. You don't explain that. Like, and the problem is we see that with a lot of younger officers, right? Like, if you get somebody on a traffic stop that has the slightest inclination to talk back to you and start questioning why you're doing something, and you don't know this stuff, you watch these officers get timid on the side of the road. They don't know what they can do. And once you realize and take this training and know what you can do, you can confidently say, no, I have the right to request you out of the vehicle. I have the right to have you stay here. I have the right for you to do X, Y, and Z. And it makes you such more of a confident cop.
Right.
You are such more – especially in the interdiction game.
Right.
If you know this stuff, that's not going to be an issue for you. It's not. You're going to be able to explain it in court. You're going to be able to explain to people on the side of the road, and you're going to be able to confidently maneuver yourself throughout a traffic stop to ultimately win, you know, what you're going after. But if you don't know this stuff, you're going to get run over, man. You're going to get run over from the people on the streets. You're going to get run over from defense attorneys, and you're just going to get destroyed.
How many times have you received compliments of people that you've arrested back at booking, right?
All the time. The other day.
What did I say?
All the time. No, he's just like, thanks, man. He's like, I'm from New York. And he's like, I get dealt with differently in New York. He goes, you were so respectful. He's like, I get it. You were doing your job. That's it, man. I talk to everybody the same way.
Hey, guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast, and it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally, and we also entertain you as well. What about getting, like, dabs? Like, yo, you're fucking sharp, bro. How did you figure that shit out?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, right? Like, sometimes they don't want to get too, you know, too into it. But sometimes you can question them to see, you know, hey, did you know, like, X, Y, and Z? And, you know, they know when, I would say, a seasoned criminal, somebody who has gotten away with something for so long, talked his way out of situations on traffic stops, never got searched, never found that compartment, they're going to be more confident just as a more confident cop who's been to training and take training is going to be more confident. So, like, every once in a while, it's almost like a mutual respect each other where they're like, damn, you know, I knew I wasn't going to get by you in that one. You know what I mean? Or, like, and you'll get stuff like that. And I've had stuff like that before. And it's, you know, it's rewarding. It's fun at the same time. Cause, like, you got to love this, man. You have to love
it. Game's the game, bro.
You have to have a passion.
Don't hate the player, right?
No, like, to get back to your initial.
And there's a respect that we have as law enforcement for people who are in the game as well.
Yeah.
Like, right?
If you're getting.
It's your job. This is our job. Yeah. We like the chase. Yeah. You're like, bring it on, motherfuckers.
And you can't take this stuff personal. Like, I tell people all the time, like, man, if I were in your situation, I'd lie to me too. Well, what are you going to do? Tell me the truth? Tell me there's 20 kilos in your car? Like, no, you're not going to do that. You know what I mean? So, like, don't take these things personal, because there's too many police officers who are good at what they do. They get the seizures, but they get, like, pissed off at people, and then they don't want to elicit more information. They don't want to try to further the investigation, maybe get a controlled delivery, maybe get a higher player in the game, because they take things personal and people lie to them. Don't take it personal. I mean, just go out and do your job. Talk to everybody the exact same way that you'd want to be talked to, and your results are just going to fly sky high. It's crazy, but, you know, there's people who just, I'm the macho cop. I'm in charge. How dare you lie to me? It's not going to go anywhere.
Well, I think sometimes people are watching other people do that, and sometimes not even at their agency. You watch old episodes of Cops. You watch On Patrol Live, I guess it's called now.
Yeah.
And you're watching these people, and that's why I always caution people watching these fucking shows. You want to watch them for entertainment? That's great. You know, pick and choose what you're gonna take from these things. And I always encourage everybody to really watch these with a very critical eye, in the sense that, what are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? What do you think was smart? What do you think wasn't smart? And don't let these people on this show become your FTOs. I got to tell you, they still need field training. Yeah. They might have 10 fucking years in the job. They still need field training. And if they don't need field training, sometimes they need behavior training. And, you know, it becomes very clear when you're watching shows like this who the more skilled are.
Sure.
The ones who communicate well, the ones who get good communication. Yeah. You can be a little funny, shit like that, but people know. Dude, I watched the first 48, right? Yeah. When you're watching the first 48, you're probably these homicide detectives. I'm going to say two things here. One, you're getting more seasoned cops. You're probably getting the better of the cops in the agency, a little more savvy. What I will say is, it is clear as day to me that nobody's reading case law. Right. I'm not going to elaborate on that, but it's clear as day that nobody's reading case law because it takes effort to read case law. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, if you were one of the best detectives, you couldn't be the best detective until you knew your craft legally.
Yeah.
Right. There's probably in the state of New Jersey 50 pieces of case law. And I'm just throwing it out there. You're speculating. 50 pieces of case law regarding Miranda and confession that you must know as a detective.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a fucking funny feeling that if I asked 95% of them, they would have no idea. Nope. Or they'd have heard something like that, or were employing those things that you had to employ, but don't know why they were doing it. They were just told, 100%. Make sure you have this when you do this.
100%.
We need to start educating our cops on, like, dude, listen, here's what happened, here's where they fucked up, or here's where they did a real good job.
Yeah.
We gotta follow this stuff. Yeah. And, you know, that's the conversation, man. We want to have good outcomes in this shit.
Sure.
And that's why I'm so adamant about case law. You could have a fucking great job. You could be the most skilled guy. Even watching some of our instructors, you know, you'll see them start to tailor their game a little bit after they've gotten hip to some of the case law that me, Brazil, all these guys have been teaching them. They're like, you think at this point now I should be reading Miranda? And I'm like, yeah. You're in Miranda territory.
Sure. Yeah.
And if this person's not going to roll, right, like let's – you want to get a confession. You're the guy, right? If we're going to start doing more things and want to get this confession, yeah, like you're getting it to know when Miranda kicks in. You watch. You can watch videos of guys who are in this game who are good at it, who I respect tremendously, who are not picking up on the clues of when it's time to start reading Miranda. Sure. And people say, well, when is that time? There's an answer. It's legal. But the real answer is it depends on what your state says, because when Miranda kicks in is different in every state, as weird as that sounds. The U.S. Supreme Court has addressed it in a point where that somebody is a reasonable person would believe that they're actually under arrest. Not a, you know, this is Berkeley v. McCarty.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cases that support this. But Miranda itself, right? This is one of those ones that's a little malleable. For example, I believe I know of a Texas case, and I'm going there next week, where there's a motorcycle pursuit. People crash out. They are apprehended, cuffed, put in the back of the police cars, then interrogated. They come to court and say, we didn't get Miranda. And the court said, you didn't need it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at this like, hold on a second, right? You would think this is something you'd have to do. In New Jersey, forget it. You would lose this in a second. God, They're giving the benefit of the doubt to the criminals all the time. But in Texas, it's good. So you might be in Texas going, you can't do that. No, I actually read the case. Well, you can't. You're like, hey, read a Miranda in the back of the car. We don't need to yet.
Yeah.
Right? But in New Jersey, you're like, what are you fucking crazy?
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a case like that. Absolutely. So that's one of those ones. It's like the same thing with Terry frisks. As uniform as this is with the principles, the actual physical acts of what people did or the circumstances, they vary state by state, dude. No bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, no bullshit. They vary state by state. So you got to go in and read Terry v. Ohio or put in, like, protective frisk, pat down, lawful search, things like this in your Google Scholar or casetext.com against your state and read the fucking 12, 18, 29 cases where somebody was frisked, they found something, and it either turned out good or bad, and here's why.
Yep.
And then you got to know your law for that state.
Absolutely.
So
you see it all the time, and it's crazy. But, like, I've had people who... Hey, you need probable cause for a dog. What are you talking about?
I know.
What are you talking about right now? Like, you are a supervisor, and you're telling police officers you need probable cause to request a canine. Like, get out of here,
dude. It's wild.
You know what I mean? So it's.
I've had to do this. I've had conversations with heads of prosecutors' offices who literally could not understand and interpret case law.
Yeah.
And they get so frustrated. Yep. Who are you to question me? I'm like, how do you think? I had a guy, no bullshit, dude.
Yeah.
No bullshit in this state, thought a canine alert established reasonable suspicion. 21 years lead suppression of a county. He thought a canine alert established reasonable suspicion. And I said to him, in this circumstance that you've described, we're prolonging a stop on reasonable suspicion to bring a dog there to get more reasonable suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
How does that make sense to you? And his response was, you know, I've always thought it sounded a little weird. Are there any cases that support that a dog establishes probable cause? I said, every single case in the history of the United States that a dog was involved.
Yeah.
So how many is that? A million.
Yeah.
Right? Case law-wise, 10,000, 15,000 cases.
Yeah.
And not one that said... A dog alert establishes reasonable suspicion.
Yep.
And that's why it's on top of knowing this for performing your job, you cannot rely on these people to give you advice. You can't look at your supervisors and your coworkers and your prosecutors that are assigned to you and say to them, what's the answer to this?
Yeah.
Because they don't know.
Yeah.
And when you start reading case law, you start realizing they don't know.
Yeah.
And then it's good that you know, because then you know. Whatever they say, you're always going to put it through a filter of like, hold on.
Yeah.
That is not actually what it said.
Yeah.
You know, and that's essentially the story of my life. let's go back to some more shit that people should know about your journey. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you must have started at some level where you were hitting smaller stuff. Did you get to a point where you started hitting bigger stuff? How did you change your game a little bit?
Training, man.
Yeah, that's it, right?
It's
the cheat sheets.
It's crazy.
I know.
It's... you know, you take a little bit of training, you get interested in it, you start realizing, okay, I need to pay attention to these cars, not these cars, you know. And it kind of went from there. And then, you know, okay, you're hitting a few grams here and there. Now I'm hitting 100 grams. Now I'm hitting half kilos. Now I'm hitting, you know, you keep going to training. Now you're hitting a kilo. And then you just took your game and you just blew it up. And you start to realize all that crap I've been doing for the last 5 years, we're going to toss that aside and we're going to start paying attention to X, Y, and Z. Start paying attention to those, you know, plain vehicles, newly registered vehicles, your common vehicles that are like rental vehicles that blend in with public. Why? Because they're the most prevalent vehicles in the market. And what they don't. You know, they're not jacking them up and throwing like millions of personalized products on their vehicles, because that costs money for a drug trafficking organization to put them on the vehicles, right? Like, you don't do that. They're taking these vehicles that blend in with the public and they're pushing them out. And once you start realizing those are the types of things you need to pay attention to, and you get all that through training and experience as you go about doing this and stopping cars. So honestly, like, I don't know at what point in my career, but as I continue to training, I just went from these small stops to just now, like, I'm looking for kilos. I'm looking for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, those are my goals. You know what I mean? And I, you know, just to stay with goals, like, I just don't understand people that go through this career. Like, you know, there's plenty of cops who are just miserable. They're here. They're just doing their job. They're collecting a paycheck. Like, as long as I'm here, man, like, I'm getting after it and I'm going to set goals for myself. I just don't understand these people that go through their careers not setting any personal goals, whether they're short-term or long-term goals. But, like, yeah, man, like, I continue, you know, at 10 years on, like, I have goals for what I want to do, what I want to hit. Like, yeah, I want to hit 1,000 pounds of marijuana. Yeah, I want to hit, you know, I busted my partner because he hit 95 kilos and, you know, my highest so far was 68. And it's just like, no, like, I want 100 kilos.
Pass each
other. Yeah, yeah. Having a good partner too. It's like, we're competitive with each other. I mean, you have to be. Like, we're there for each other, but you're competitive with each other. Like, you want to put, you know, kind of one up each other, you know? And that's just how we are with each, you know, when we're out there doing it. But I just, it just blows my mind that people just don't set goals in life, don't set goals at work. And, like, how are you supposed to achieve anything? And, like, you're just going to go through this career and just be miserable and collect the paycheck? Like, no, man. Like, enjoy it while you're here. You know what I mean? I tell people all the time, I truly believe that if you're a good interdiction cop, I think you can do anything on this job. I truly believe that because it's so much behavioral analysis, and you are creating investigations just by observing people and their behavior. And if you can do that, I think you can get in a box with somebody and interview them really well if you're good at interdiction. So, you know, there's a lot of hate around interdiction, but it's just because people don't understand it.
They're jealous.
They don't understand how you can go and hit, you know, a couple kilos. Oh, you never worked that road. How'd you hit kilos? Like, no, dude. Like, I took what I applied and here I am doing it. And that's how it is. You know what I mean? So it's fun, man. But, you know, I truly believe that if you're going to do interdiction, you know, to go back to your initial statement about North Jersey and a bunch of farmers and hunters and stuff like that. But, you know, you'll have people who have no problem doing 8 hours in a tree stand and not taking a swing, not taking a shot. You know, they might see a deer, that's not the right shot. They love it. They'll be up there for 8 hours, 10 hours, a whole day. They'll go there for back-to-back days. But you ask them to do that on the side of the road, can't do it. Can't do it. So there has to be a passion, right? There has to be the discipline to be out there and do an 8-hour shift, do a 10-hour shift, and not stop a car. Like, you have to have the discipline to do it. But again, you can go sit in a tree stand, but you can't do that on the side of the road. You have to have a passion for it, right? And if you don't have the mental toughness to be out there and to go through highs and lows in your career, because even the best people are going to do it. You know, you ask Kenny, I guarantee you he has highs and lows, and when he's hitting lows or how frequently he's hitting them, you have to have the mental toughness just to push through that, because, yeah, it can suck. It can suck if you don't hit for a month or you don't hit for 2 months, and then, bam, you hit three in a row. Like, that's just how this game works. You know what I mean? So it's fun, man. I love it. I love talking about it. And as I've gone through training and I've become more confident in everything I do, I now enjoy testifying even more than first you go into it, you're a little timid about it. You're like, again, but it just goes to building that confidence, taking that training, knowing what you can do, understanding case law. And you're just going to be so much more of a confident cop when you're out there testifying to this stuff.
Then with that comes a reputation.
Sure.
Right, dude?
Absolutely.
You know? I mean, yeah. You might have some disdain amongst peers at your station, barracks, precinct.
Yeah.
But, dude, the right people are going to hear about you.
Yeah.
And then opportunity is going to come knocking.
Absolutely.
I know guys at the NYPD who take our training. You know, obviously they don't pay for anything because they don't want them doing anything. Yeah, yeah. I think morale is probably in. I don't know if there's anything lower than a basement, but it's, I don't know. Like, they're probably at the core of the earth with morale there. It's probably horrendous. I talk to these guys all the time. Yeah. They are miserable.
Yep.
However, with that being said, I've met men and women who come to our training and go out and they're doing things still, like hitting traps,
yeah,
hitting a kilo here,
yeah,
getting a really good arrest. And, you know, people are, ah, why are you bothering, blah, blah, blah. But then all of a sudden, year four, year three, year two, even year two, hey, bro, street crimes heard about me, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, man, like, you might get fucking shit from your people that you work with in your precinct.
Oh, yeah.
But then out of nowhere,
yep,
hey, there's a kid in fucking the 122 hitting loads.
Yeah, not a slug.
Right, right.
Getting,
you know, and like,
after it.
There is these small little packs of these proactive cops,
sure,
and these task forces that are always on the lookout. I mean, even when we were at our police department, we usually got anywhere between like 7 and 15 guys every 6 months new.
Yeah.
Big agency, a lot of turnover, right? Really spread out turnover. Bro, we'd be like, yo, is there anybody like that looks like that we like the seven of us that actually worked, we're like, yo, anybody potential like that we can fucking adopt? Like we just you come in and we're like, yo, my man. Like, you know, you're like walking down the hall and you're like, my man.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, come on over here, bro.
Yeah.
Heard you like to you want to like learn this shit, right? Yeah. Like I'm like a drug dealer, right?
Yeah.
And like I'm like a secret society, like tell me about you. Like you wanna like, I wanna get drugs and guns and shit. I'm like, all right, man, what are you doing next Thursday?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what do you mean? Like, three of us, we're going to go out and get some beers. You want to roll with us?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to tell you some things. Hey, bro, today on the shift, hey, man, I'm going to talk to the lieutenant real quick. I'm going to try to see if I can get you freed up tonight. My partner's not in. Yeah. I get you in a car with me. You good with that?
Yeah.
Oh, for real? Yeah. And then, like, you just start. I would always really want to invest in people that had the potential or at least had the desire to do so.
Sure.
Unfortunately, some people don't have the intelligence, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
Let's face facts.
Yeah.
It's an intelligence game.
Yeah.
You can get good at it, right? You can get...
Sure.
For me, I'm always like, man, at least get to where your potential is.
Yeah.
Right? At least at your full potential, you can't... And something as simple as, hey, man, if you go out and employ seatbelt violations on passengers and cars and this dumb stuff where we can get to the identity of the passengers comfortably, constitutionally... and do warrant checks, you can get a reputation on that that will blow your mind. Because, dude, you'll realize the theory and the proof in the theory is people who have felony warrants, full extradition warrants, they're going to be your passengers in cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's highly unlikely that it's going to be your drivers of the cars.
Yeah.
When you understand that there are such things as pedestrian bicycle violations. You don't got to be some rocket scientist. You could literally go out and just employ bicycle violations, not to the point where you're going to write tickets for bicycle violations, where you're just going to, any violation you see with anybody on a bike, you know, outside of like some woman who's like maybe on like a bike and like with a flowered hat on and floating around and like with daisies in her basket, right? You're going to stop bikes and make sure that you understand just the principles of this is a traffic stop. You can compel identification. You can run warrant checks for these people. Mm-hmm. If they lie about who they are, we can arrest and bring them in and fingerprint. Dude, you'd probably be known as one of the most talented cops in the world on such a dumb fucking thing that anybody can do. I would actually argue that if I said to you, Brian Konopka, you're not allowed to use behaviors. Anything that you know, all I want you to do is go out and blindly for the next 6 hours, for the next shift, stop cars for passengers violating the law, whether it's ashing a cigarette out the window or wearing their seatbelt. Yeah. You can make a car stop every 5 to 10 minutes, right? Do this for 8 hours. Let me know what you got.
Yeah.
I promise you, dude, that you guys would lock up 14 people, and like number six would be somebody significant.
Yeah.
Right? Like we've been looking for this guy, right? Yeah,
100%.
As long as you understood how to play the game constitutionally and appropriately, and people say, well, that's kind of fucking sneaky. That's kind of bullshit that people don't like about the police, really?
Yeah.
Because there is a guy right now traveling on this country, or thousands of them, that are wanted for raping kids and are going to rape kids tonight.
Yeah.
So that's not part of your priority, and you want to just kind of twist this to fit your narrative. You can go fuck yourself. Because I got to tell you, I got four kids, and I don't want nobody coming to rape them. And Brian's got four kids, and I don't think people should be going to rape his kids either. So with that being said, I would highly encourage this. And the beauty about something like this is just so simple. Because if the person is legitimate, you're not writing a ticket. You're just going, hey, man, again, state of New Jersey, just so you know, it's a $54 fine. You got to wear your seatbelt in the back seat.
Yep.
No ticket. Don't worry about it. You're good to go, man. Everything checks out.
Yeah.
What is that guy saying when he's leaving? Holy crap. This cop was awesome.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking nice guy. You could do this politely. Mm-hmm. What a nice guy. Didn't get a ticket, none of this shit.
Yep.
And it's wonderful. It's such a powerful tool and so surface level where even your administrators who try to stop cops from doing work will have a difficult time trying to throw a fucking monkey wrench in your spokes here.
Yeah.
Right? No shit, right? Yeah. That's a really light way to get good at doing this in an agency that may have no clue what police work is. And there's a lot of them.
Absolutely. It blows my mind that, you know, if you look back on when everybody decided they were going to be a cop, you can't tell me they didn't think about locking people up, locking out. Like, somewhere along the line, these police officers are getting so damn bitter about their job and life, and maybe they didn't do anything, and somebody passed them up for promotion because they were actually out there getting it. Not to say that the promotion process is fair, because I certainly think there's areas where the way people are being promoted is just not the right way. And I, you know, especially as you see with, like, larger agencies, I think it's just never going to be the fair way to do it about guys who are getting after it and putting them out there. But I don't understand these police officers who just hate on all these people for being proactive and doing their job and, like, trying to stop criminals. Like, that should be every cop's goal. I don't understand where along the line in this process they got mad about you being proactive and making too many stops. And, oh, we got to get this call. Well, what are you doing? You're sitting on station. You could be out here with your guys, you know, like, whatever happened to leading by example and being out with, you know, if you're a supervisor and being out there with your guys, because I've been with plenty of supervisors who are out there getting after it, you know, with their cops trying to make a difference. But, you know, there's this huge culture in police work of just guys who just, they just don't care anymore. And they don't want to see anything proactive. They don't want you making a stink about anything. Like, they don't care. They just do not care.
And what does that say to the world? And it's the same fucking people that are watching CNN and Fox News and saying, oh, this is bullshit the way they treat us. You're part of the fucking problem, brother.
Yeah.
Because when you are feeling pressure and you could ignore it and still show up and do your job, right? And you do it with pride and care, you're sending a message back, just like us here. This company, we've taken the responsibility that nobody else has decided to take, us and other companies as well. We're saying to people, we get the world's fucked up, right? That's fine. We get the world has turned their back, and these administrations, these politics and all this stuff has really painted the police officer as this villain for some reason. But we know the truth.
Yeah.
And we're not going to let that dissuade us from the work that we got to do. Law enforcement's never going anywhere. People say, oh, would you go to a place like Portland and stuff like that? I go, they got cops there? They go, yeah. I go, I'm going to Portland, right?
Yeah.
Do I think the Portland politics are optimal for a growth in a country that's positive? No, I think they're fucking insane, just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
We think Portland and California on the East Coast, forget it. Like, and what's the other ones? Washington.
There's a bunch.
What's the one in Washington that's fucked up?
Seattle.
Seattle, right? But there's still cops in Seattle that need training.
Yeah.
So just because their mayor or their politicians may not be the type of people we would highly encourage to be in office, it doesn't mean the cops in the street have any less of a job to do. It's just more hard for them.
Yeah.
But I think they still deserve the knowledge on how to do this stuff and how to stay alive at a very minimum.
And, you know, to your credit and building Street Cop up, like, yeah, there's, you know, A, they need the training, but B, when they come from morale is at an all-time low, I think this company does a good job of picking it back up and keeping the message out there that's like, yeah, okay, but you got to stay separate from the politics. Like, the politics are one thing, but you can't control that. You're a cop. You're not a politician. You're not a legislator. You don't set the rules. They give us the boundaries. They set the case law. We have to work with it. And if you're not willing to do that, and if you're bitter about it and the morale's low, well, you need something to pick you back up. And companies like Street Cop do that.
Dude, people aren't going anywhere, right? You know what I mean? Like, no, if you're not leaving this job, you might as well get good at it, or at least know how to get good at it. So if you're not taking off and going to a different career field, why would you, especially in an environment where you're being held to a higher standard? You could be fucking miserable as much as you want, but you still need to come and get training. Because guess what? When you get sent to that call and you're completely checked out of this job, man, you know, you're lucky if all you do is get administrative discipline.
Yeah.
Right? Because you got people going to fucking prison now for mistakes.
Yep.
Again, unintentional mistakes, but now there's culpability. You work with that woman who shot that guy in Minnesota, or right outside of Minnesota. You know, the kid's on a traffic stop. He takes off. And again, I'm not going to start playing the game of, like, well, if he didn't take off, you're right. You know, if he didn't take off, there would have been no force used. He would have just complied.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, she grabbed her pistol instead of her fucking taser. 29, 30 years on the job. How much training has she been to? Does she consider this job? Are you here because you need money?
Yeah.
Are you still in a job? And, you know, tough set. She got like 18 months in jail or in prison or something like that on a mistake, dude. Yeah. Where, yeah. And in an area where you know that in Minneapolis and in Minnesota, they're going to hang you.
Yeah.
You know in California and Washington and these states, you're going to be judged differently than if you were in Texas or Alabama 100%. Or yep. Louisiana, where they're allowing the benefit of the doubt because they realize it was a mistake and they're not pandering to these fucking liberal lunatics that have no idea what they're talking about and are in charge. It's wild.
I like to think it's going to come back around. You know, it might not be very soon, but I think it's coming back around.
I think it is.
It has to.
I got to be honest with you, dude. I'm on the front lines. Yeah. I'm out there. I'm listening to it. Yeah. You got a lot of these Gen Xer cops, these millennial cops coming up to the ranks.
Yeah.
And they're not afraid, bro. You know, they're not the fucking blind orders. I'm scared. Yep. You're getting some real balls out there now where people are saying, you want a chief? I'll be your chief. Don't fucking bother me. Yeah. And our guy's going to do a good job. Leave it up to me. I think you're getting a lot. You're getting a better quality administrator these days.
Sure.
And as these fucking dinosaurs continue to fucking fall off with this old school mentality. By the way, some of those dinosaurs are great guys.
Yeah.
Right. We had guys in here about a month ago, they're like, we don't want our chief to leave. He's got like 39 on. I'm like, oh, you guys waiting for him to leave? He's like, no.
No.
Like, we want this motherfucker. Yeah. He's great. He's like 63. He's the best.
Yeah.
So there are those guys too, but like, I think there's a real hope in the future, dude. Let's do something real quick.
Yeah.
A few tips for anybody who want to get better interdiction, since that's what you teach.
You got to train. Hands down, that's number one. That's the only way you're going to become better at being a cop. Number two, you got to talk to people. You got to talk to people because interdiction is talking. You got to be able to do behavior analysis and read people, read body behavior. Like Sean Grogan, like you got to take that class, man. You got to be able to pick up on what's normal and what's not normal, establishing a baseline for people. Like it is so huge in the world of interdiction. And if you're able to do that, that's going to separate you from getting those small grams that you're getting from your users to getting bigger loads by paying attention to these types of behaviors. So train, man. Like that's probably number one, two, and three, right?
Because
like through that training, you're going to learn, okay, I can do this. This is what I should look for. And this is the types of body behaviors that are associated with criminals. Like Street Cop offers all of that. They would like you cover the full spectrum of interdiction by talking to people, taking training, paying attention to vehicles, what types of traps, and have the confidence to do it. You know what I mean? Like I always tell people, if you're doing interdiction, one of the first things you need to do is go out and just watch traffic. Because you need to watch and learn what's normal. And once you do that and you apply your training and you're confident talking to people, it's going to click together.
Yeah, so not just sitting in there and being a spectator, going out and being a practitioner as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to go out. Practice makes perfect, folks.
You have to.
And if you got a agency that's not supporting proactive work and they're going to hang your head, they're going to serve your head up on a silver platter or hang you when you make a mistake, it may be time to start thinking about where you're going to go next.
Absolutely.
Because if this is how you see your career, but it's being blocked by some administrations, it's time to move on. And as bad as it is, in some circumstances to be a cop these days, I will tell you this, it's never been a better time to have options as a cop because everybody's dying for personnel. And these administrations are beginning to learn that they don't get to treat people like they once did. And they're probably going to see that these agencies, in order to retain people, you got to treat people right.
Yep.
Bro, I appreciate you being here, dude.
Yeah, man.
The awesome. Best, man. This is great.
You. Awesome.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.